3, 2, 1. Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is, despite what David may have told you otherwise, the Hoops HD Report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by a panel of college basketball experts. We have John Stalica, Rocco Miller, John Titel, Matt Sikowski, and the puppet David Griggs, all joining us tonight to review and recap the past week of college sports, preview the next week, at least in college basketball, and talk about anything else that comes across during the course of the show. Did I cover everything? I hope so.
Yep. Great show, Chad. All right.
All right. Then thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to
you all. Joining us, and we'll talk to you all next week.
All right. Let's get down to it, and let's go ahead here. And I'm going to pull up on the screen standings like we show every week, and we're going to start things off tonight in the Big 12 Conference by popular request, where the West Virginia Mountaineers are now the number 2 team in the nation. Villanova took over as number 1 today. And let's start right there with that game against Oklahoma.
I thought the show was over. I thought the show was over.
Well, then I'm not going to talk to you about it. Rocco, how about what West Virginia did against Oklahoma over the weekend?
Yeah, it was a game plan that Oklahoma I don't think has seen yet. Javon Carter was all over Trey Young, especially in the first half, tried to get in his head and frustrate him. Bob Huggins said after the game that was a big part of the game plan, is to take him out of rhythm, to stay in his face all day. And then Javon Carter eventually got in foul trouble in the second half, but by then West Virginia had a nice cushion. And once Oklahoma started pressing, they brought Carter back in, and he was able to take care of the ball and close it out. So nice job by West Virginia to protect the home court.
Yeah, and John T., as a result of that game, actually, we found more about Trey Young. Here's his Wikipedia entry, correct? we lost Titel, but we'll try to get it back. But...
on the other one.
Answer that. It might be a fan.
It is a great Wikipedia entry. I can't take credit. I had somebody else on Facebook post it. But as Rocco said, Javon Carter was definitely his daddy on – game on the weekend. The thing is, like, Carter deserves all the credit. He had a great game. He almost had a triple-double in the first half, and the defense was amazing. The thing is, Trae Young still scored, like, 29 points. He couldn't make those 30-foot threes that he's been making all year. And the thing is, like, he almost fouled out the entire Mountaineer team. I think 4 of their starters ended up with 4 fouls, and he ended up closing the gap at the end. I mean, I think it says not that Trae Young is human, which I guess it does a little bit, but that, like, he's almost capable of winning a game by himself because he didn't have a ton of credit. And it was also – Carter didn't do it by himself. Kanate had a double-double and Teddy Adams with 20 off the bench. So it really was a team effort. And I forget who on this panel picked West Virginia in the Final Four last week. I can't remember who that was.
Me neither. Anyway, moving on.
But yeah, a couple other games though. Stalica, we saw.
Can I make a quick point? Just it's an actual serious point. I say this a lot. There are games that are played during the regular season that are harder to win as an individual game than any individual tournament game. It's harder to beat West Virginia, who's a Final Four team or Final Four caliber team, at West Virginia than it is to beat them on a neutral floor in a deep Elite Eight Final Four tournament game. Oklahoma is absolutely fine. Yeah, they didn't get the win, but it's a situation where West Virginia is good enough to beat the number one team in the country on their floor. So, like, there's nothing to indicate that Oklahoma is any worse than they were on Friday. Just, anyway, moving on.
Well, Matt, let me follow up on that point. Texas Tech won at Kansas, I know, huge win on Tuesday night, followed it up with a home win over K-State, is ahead of Oklahoma in the rankings now, and I don't get that. And I like this Texas Tech team a lot, but you drop Oklahoma below them thanks to losing to West Virginia on the road?
Yeah, I think Oklahoma's probably got a little bit stronger resume. Now, they are ahead of them in all the predictive metrics by a few spots, so I can see that. I actually might like Texas Tech more in a tournament setting because I think their style is a little more solid. Oklahoma's for as fun as they watch. I can easily see them going out in the second round if Trae Young has an off night. But for now, Oklahoma probably should be ahead, but I can hear the argument otherwise given the predictive metrics and that, like, Texas Tech plays probably a little more solid, disciplined style of play.
Oh, 202 tempo versus number 3 in tempo. That's a little bit of a different style of play, if you say the least. Right. Stalica, oh, by the way, you know, Kansas is in this conference as well. And I don't know that we ever go this long without discussing Kansas in a Big 12 discussion before. But bounce back for the Texas Tech with a nice road win at TCU this weekend.
It seems to be a popular pastime for the past 15 or 16 years where we've said, is this the year Kansas is finally going to fall out of grace? I mean, yes, they do have a couple home losses and a quasi-home loss, but only one of those is in the Big 12 so far. But I think if you look at what they've done away from home, winning at TCU and also another win prior to that, they're still going to be within a game. And teams like West Virginia, Oklahoma, rest of the Big 12 outside of Tech still come to the fog. I wouldn't count out the Jayhawks just yet.
Well, David, here's the upcoming schedule in the Big 12. And are there any game in there that is not looking like a NCAA tournament match quality matchup? I'd like to find that game because I don't see it.
Iowa State is slipping a little bit.
Okay.
But no, those are all, it is a big week. And how crazy is it where you could play 8 games in your conference against protected seed caliber teams or teams that could end up as a protected seed? I mean, when has – I know that the ACC, I think, had 5 teams that are in protected seeds 1 year when they only had – back in the 9-team format. And I'm trying to remember if there's ever been a case where half the league got a protected seed other than that. So, I mean, I realize we have a long way to go, and I realize there's a lot of moving pieces. But is this – a historically good year for the Big 12, not just a good year, but historically good?
Well, Tytel, how about that question? I mean, look at the schedule. Tuesday, Texas Tech at Oklahoma. Saturday, TCU, Oklahoma. Monday, Kansas, West Virginia.
It's a great game every night, if not multiple great games every night. As far as historic, like, it certainly has the potential to be, but I think that's a look in early January. I mean, I don't see Iowa State like ripping off 9 out of 10 to get back to respectability and make the tournament. I think the bottom half of this league is going to keep going down. And what makes it historic is teams like Texas Tech and to a degree TCU, who have very little history of doing outstanding, playing outstanding like ranked teams, deservedly so. I think they're going to fall back to earth. But for now, yeah, it's looking historic, but call me in 2 months.
But at the same time, if you're a fan of Baylor, it's now or never because you have a game at West Virginia, which is a tall order, but you still have a game at Iowa State where they've been the most consistent winner at Hilton Coliseum outside of this league. And then you get about as close to a winnable game as you'll find in this league at home against Baylor the following Monday. So they did get the win at home against Texas, but they're going to need a lot more to get back in the picture here.
Well, let's talk about one other conference that's having a historic type of season in terms of the number of teams that could end up getting bids for the SEC. I had a bracket this morning, and I do not think it's going to hold up at this number. I actually threw 10 SEC teams into my bracket, which is insane for a conference that was 2 or 3.
You're mentally ill. Other than that, I mean, But
Rocco, let's start by talking about the past week in the SEC and. I mean, a lot of interesting games, and as Texas A&M still can't find a way to get healthy and win games, or get his team on the field, according to win games.
Yeah, well, Texas A&M took a tough loss from a ridiculous shot by LSU to lose by one. So that's a heartbreaker. But A&M keeps finding themselves in an interesting game almost every time out, and now it gets even more interesting as they go to Kentucky, I think, tomorrow. Also, in this conference, I think last week the team that impressed the most was Auburn. They started the week off by going to Tennessee and pretty much handling them, pulling out a 10-point win, and then turned around and got off to a big start against Arkansas and held them off for a 9-point win. So Auburn still only losses to Temple. Strange, Clemson's got the same problem. But they've really been utilizing that talent well, and they're on a nice run right now.
Well, Tytel, let me ask you about both those teams. Let's start with LSU. This was a team that I thought I would get ripped apart. I wasn't ripped apart as much this morning when I said that as of right now, they would be my last team in the field. But I mean, look at the resume. It's something looking a little impressive despite some asterisks by the A&M win.
If only we had a team tree we could check out. I will rip you apart for that. I think that certainly respectable and certainly better than I or probably anybody thought. I love Tremont Waters. I think he has a chance to be SEC Freshman of the Year, which I had all given to Michael Porter Jr. a couple months ago. Obviously, the injury bug bit him hard. The win over Texas A&M looking less good. The win over Michigan looking better. No shame in losing to Kentucky. That Notre Dame loss, though, I mean, 39 points. That's isolated and way back a couple months ago. But people are going to see that one. And Stephen F., they're going to make the tournament, so it won't be so bad. But I don't know.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, the next nine games for LSU are all losable, so they're going to have their work cut out for them here coming soon.
Okay, hopefully I got the screen back up there. Thanks.
I don't think it ever went off.
Okay. Well, it went off on my side, but hopefully it stayed up for everybody else. Technical difficulties, but Matt, how about Arkansas? Now suddenly falling to 1-2. Any trouble there for this Arkansas team that was playing really good just a week or two ago?
Well, yeah, they're back probably out of the protected seed discussion, but they're still in okay shape for the tournament. That Oklahoma win out of neutral court's going to look real good the rest of the year. I wouldn't be panicking too much. I think they might be falling back a little bit more toward their level. I think they are more of like a 7-9 seed type team, not necessarily protected seed. But I wouldn't be worrying too much. It may be similar to like Tennessee. Tennessee got the Kentucky win to stay in the tide a little bit, but they're again, probably falling from the protected seed discussion a month ago to now back to like the 7-9 seed discussion, which is probably what they are as a team.
Well, I guess there's one other team I want to really quickly mention here, David. And while they really don't care very much about basketball tonight, especially recording this on January 8th, Alabama, I did not have in my field today, despite having 10 SEC teams in there. This team is really going the wrong direction, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising because they looked so solid just a couple of weeks ago, but they've really hit the skids, and Georgia just pounded them. I that was one of the bigger surprises of the weekend, not that Georgia won, but just how uncompetitive the Tide were in that game. And this was a team that I thought was looking like a tournament team, but they haven't the last couple of weeks. And could you believe – it just goes to show you that the SEC, the buzz around the Alabama-Georgia game, they're still buzzing about it, both campuses. It's just – wow.
Now, we could also be seeing some parallels to Vanderbilt last year. While Alabama, they don't exactly have the number two strength of schedule like the Doors did last year. They can easily vault themselves right back up with a couple wins against the top this year.
Rocco, here's the upcoming schedule in the SEC, and great chance for Auburn to pick up two more wins, hosting Ole Miss and on the road at Mississippi State. But I guess we got to circle that A&M Kentucky game, possibly. I don't know. What's your best looking game on this list here?
I think the A&M Kentucky game is really important, just because A&M's already off to an 0-3 start, so they desperately need to find a way to win. But it's on the road and the toughest place to play in the conference, so. Definitely going to have their work cut out for them, even if they get Williams healthy for tomorrow. But outside of that, I think looking forward to Saturday, I think Auburn should be able to take care of Mississippi State. They played a lot better at home, though. And the Missouri-Arkansas game, I think Missouri might start to tumble a little bit after that tough, heartbreaking loss to Florida. When the ball was stolen by Chioza and they lost in heartbreaking fashion as well.
I mean, we have figures of speech that we use around here, Clusing being one, although we don't use that nearly as much. Is Mizzouing becoming – because how many times – not necessarily in the last couple of years when Mizzou lost to everybody, but if anyone was going to lose in that fashion, it would be Mizzou. Well, anyway.
I'll tell you what, why don't we move on to the ACC, which is a conference we normally show off with. Hopefully my audio difficulties have sorted themselves out and you can all hear me now. But in the ACC, and let's start with – well, Tytel, I think you wanted to discuss a little issue with North Carolina and Ted Valentine, correct? Unfortunately, we don't have the video, but –
Damn you, technology. Yeah, so they had a pass to Joel Berry towards the end of the game, and he got held by a Florida State player, and the ball went out of bounds, and they sent it the other way. Berry, as a senior point guard, defending tournament most outstanding player, wanted to go talk to the ref and say, hey, you missed him, like, grabbing me. What's the deal? It seemed like he was calm about it. He wasn't, like, screaming and pointing and stuff. But he didn't have a chance because Ted Valentine does the 180 and turns around so that he, and it keeps his back to him. And stayed like that for a few seconds, then peeks back to see if Berry went away. And then he calls for the ball, and Berry, in a totally boss move, puts the ball right on the ground, does not toss it to the ref or hand it to him, which I thought was fantastic. And Valentine just let it stand there because he's not going to be the one bending down to pick it up. Now there are reports that Valentine might retire because either he's getting too old for this stuff or he just doesn't like it or whatever. The weird thing is he's actually a decent ref. He's been in several Final Fours, and you don't get to be that on reputation as a jerk. You get to do that because you're good at your job. But turning your back on a senior point guard who wants to ask you a question at the end of a tight game seems a little disrespectful to me at the very least.
Yeah, as far as I know, the ACC still has the normal assignments for Valentine, but the Big Ten did pull him off a couple games, including the Ohio State and Michigan State, which we'll get to a little bit later.
Well, Sleek, let me stick with you a second here. Talking about North Carolina, losing to Florida State, losing to Virginia, is there cause for concern for the Tar Heels, you know, with back-to-back losses like that?
Might be cause for concern as far as a protected seed goes. I don't really blame them for losing at Virginia, although the Cavaliers seem to have their number as far as keeping them about 20 or 30 points below their typical average. The game against Florida State may be one that quote-unquote gets away, but I still think the Tar Heels have plenty of good things on their profile, primarily stemming from the PKAE Invitational, that it shouldn't damage them too much for the time being.
Well, I'm not talking even as much as seeding, just as much as concern for, you know, how deep can they go. This is
not very.
This is not a team that's looking like a Final Four team by any means right now.
David. Not right now, but I certainly wouldn't bet against them in the upcoming months.
Well, and another team, David, that I guess is treading the other way. How about Joby's not with us, our colleague who knows everything about Virginia, but those Hoos up to number 3 in the nation and looking like a 1 seed.
Yeah, and they are looking like a 1 seed. They've played like it. Their profile certainly shows it. They've only have one loss. I believe it was on the road to West Virginia, who we just got done brazing. They're looking as good as anyone. Now, there's some other teams with bloated records, but Clemson, while they're having a really good year, hasn't done it. They haven't lifted nearly the weight that Virginia has in that role, and they've won on the road. They've won at home. They've won everywhere. If only we could get their team sheet up.
Clemson?
No, Virginia.
Okay.
I mean, if only there was a way to do – hey, look at that.
Look at that. Virginia only loss at West Virginia. Not too many terms of big time, but that North Carolina win is a nice one.
Yeah. And again, like, you know, the Virginia Tech and VCU wins, maybe not as incredible as they seemed at the time, but I really like this team. I mean, looking like a 1 seed. We'll see what they do. They certainly will get their chance at big road wins.
I like their team, but that profile, they're going to need Rhode Island to go storm through the A-10 because that's about the only thing they really didn't know down at conference. And come 1 seed level, that's going to be hard. Like their fellow conference mate Duke, Villanova, Michigan State, all I think did more out of conference. Like that's where it might be a little tougher for Virginia come 1 seed discussion time.
Well, Rocco, we want to talk about, he mentions Duke, and probably I thought one of the most surprising results of the entire weekend, that Duke just really couldn't even get back into that game against NC State on Saturday.
Yeah, Duke seems to always have trouble when they go to Raleigh, no matter how good or bad NC State is. So I know it's a crazy atmosphere, and Duke's got a young team besides Allen. Bagley obviously still showed up. He had a huge game. But, yeah, like you said, it was too little too late. They got the momentum early and didn't let go. Now Duke's lost to BC and NC State in road games. I think Duke's still one of the best teams in the country, and they're going to go on the road and The thing about Duke, you got to realize every time they go on the road, it's going to be a crazy atmosphere. Every school is fired up to play them. It's their Super Bowl, basically, unless it's one of the top teams in the league. So, that's just, you know, what Duke's up against every year, it seems like.
Well, Duke this coming week is at Pittsburgh. They host Wake Forest, then they're at Miami. Hopefully they can win at Pitt, Tytel, but I'm starting to doubt this team's ability to win road games.
I mean, it is the ACC. I don't think you have any shame in losing on the road. I mean, Florida State right. just lost at Miami. It doesn't make Florida State a bad team. It means Miami's one of the best teams in the country.
Yes, but BC and NC State are not as good as Miami. This has been a criticism.
I like Duke. NC State's as good as anybody.
On the grounds that they beat Duke. Well, is Boston College – I mean, my thing about Duke is that they typically struggle in true road games. I think last year they were 3-5 in true road games, or maybe it was 4-6 or something like that, which isn't terrible. But when you're talking about protected seeds, you tend to do a little bit better than that. Now, they do have some great wins away from home, but in true road games this year, they're 1-2, and the three teams they played are not likely to make the tournament. And this isn't really unusual for Duke. If you go back and look at them, maybe not so much 2 and 3 years ago, but last year and then the year before, they do struggle in true road games. Not that a lot of teams – I mean, a lot of teams do, but they seem to struggle more than your average protected seed does, at least to me.
Well, fortunately, yeah. A game at Pittsburgh is just what the doctor ordered for Duke.
Right.
So, yeah, I think if you were a Duke fan out there, the one concern I would have is their defense, especially against the three-point shot. It seemed like NC State was just – drilling threes open a lot of that game. And then also, if you go back and watch the BC game, they drained a ton of threes. So Duke's got some defensive concerns they got to iron out, but you got to figure with Coach K and a couple months to work with and a lot of big games. I think he'll have them ready by March, but it's definitely something to monitor.
Well, you got there. I have Duke's remaining schedule up there with their team sheet on the right hand of those three columns. Look at the road games left, though. I mean, they should win a lot of those. Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, a road trip to St. John's, at Va Texas. So they got, but I'm just not confident that they can win those games if they play like they did in these last two. They've won true road win, David, and that's at Indiana.
Right. Not likely a tournament team. Now, they'll win a couple of them, but are they going to beat anybody in a again, the measure, at least for me, and this is general, it's not specific, and Duke does have a lot of good wins away from home, and I don't want to pretend like they don't, but when you're talking about protected seeds, you're talking about at least one win in a true road game against someone that's in the top half of the bracket, wearing white in the round of 64, and when you're talking about a one seed, you're typically talking about a true road win against another protected seed, generally speaking, and it seems like there have been years where Duke has gotten that seed without meeting those credentials, and they've gone out early. Went out early last year, in the round of 32.
I also pulled up Clemson's profile there real quick. This is a team that has won its only road test, including a win at Ohio State. Just wanted to focus on a game early next week. It's actually next Tuesday. Tytel, Clemson is at North Carolina, one of the best Clemson teams we've seen in a long time. Could this be the year that for the first time in Clemson history, they win a road game at UNC?
I mean, if Texas Tech can win at Kansas, which they've never done, I believe they were 0-18, and Utah won in Eugene for the first time since 1950-something. So if there was going to be any year, this is the year. But, man, if it comes down to Brad Brownell versus Roy Williams, it's hard for me to pick Brad Brownell. Yeah. No offense.
It is. Well, there are – I mean, yeah, Texas Tech winning at Kansas State for the first time in 18 tries. I think we're in the 60s, are we not, with Clemson trying to win at North Carolina.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Let's have Big East, and Matt, this is your conference, and so let me, you and Sleek is both conference. Let me start with you, Matt, on this. We're Seton Hall now in first place, following a nice road win at Butler over the weekend.
Yeah, I think Hall is well on the road to a protected seed here if they keep this up and, say, go 12-6, 13-5 at Big East play. that Texas Tech neutral court win looks better and better by the day. And now winning at Butler, I don't think a ton of teams can do it. Villanova didn't do that, so that I think is going to be a big win. Definitely will be a tier one win in the new resume here. And then I like this Hall team, senior-laden. Their guard play could get a little, depending on how Carrington's protecting the ball, could occasionally get a little iffy, but it's still a really good senior-laden team that I think they'll give Villanova a decent run for it. I think in the end, Nova still wins by a couple of games, but if Nova has more instances like Butler, this Hall could be the one to take advantage of it.
And Sleek, I got to bring you in here on your Xavier team going the opposite way. How shocked were you that they couldn't beat Providence over the weekend?
Not terribly shocked when you consider they haven't really had a dominant performance in the past month or so. Their best games were probably against Butler at home and also Marquette on the road. I mean, they were getting some nice performances from their inside guys and Tyreek Jones and Kareem Kanner, but it seemed like they were just perpetually trading 2 for 3 during the second half, and this time they dug themselves a deep hole early on that they could not overcome in the second half. But definitely credit a Providence team that looked a lot hungrier from the start in this one.
And David, I got to ask you this question. I don't know I've ever seen this before. We are here January 8th recording this, so a week or two into conference play. We have a team in a power conference that's 11-4 overall with an RPI of 205. Has it ever happened?
Without researching it, no, it has not.
Okay. It is just absolutely amazing that you could see a Big East team that's 11-4 with that type of RPI. This Big South that type of record that have better RPIs than that.
I think there are some Clemson teams in the 90s that could have made a run for that when they were loading their records.
Yeah, but this is just like they were undefeated and had a poorer RPI than a Texas Southern team that hadn't won a game. And the thing about their record is like it's going to go down. Like if your winning percentage goes from 100% down to about 50 or 60, your RPI is going to plummet. Because it's, I mean, that's 25% of your RPI is your own record. And theirs is going to keep getting worse by a lot. Like, when you think about it, like 18-2 to 26-2 isn't a huge change. 11-0 or whatever they were, yeah, out of conference, 11-0 down to 500 is a huge change. Their RPI is going to continue to sink.
Well, plus, and their opponents, when they presented, don't think it's going up too much either.
No, it won't.
Rocco, I got the upcoming schedule in the Big East and a pretty big game coming up Wednesday night.
Yeah, the Wednesday night game's big. I think, I mean, it'll be flashy for the people that, you know, follow the scores on ESPN and all that. But I think Villanova should be able to handle Xavier the way they're playing, especially in Philadelphia. But I think the games I'm most excited about are to see if Seton Hall can keep playing well on the road at Marquette tomorrow. And then I think that game on Saturday with a hot Creighton team going at Xavier is really interesting.
Well, a few things to consider for Xavier that may be a plus. Number one, it's not at the Pavilion because of renovations that are going on there. And number two, Xavier is actually 4-2 against the AP number one team in their last 6 meetings.
That's interesting.
I'm also looking at the at Titilla at Mark. Well, I guess this is Matt's team, but Marquette, an interesting week with a game at Butler coming up there as well as the Seton Hall game. You've also got the Butler at Providence game. So there's a few other games of note there, I would think, coming up this week.
Yeah, I say, Chad, now is being a bracket guy posted on the Marquette boards. This is a week that could, with 2 wins, Marquette could suddenly be looking, I think, wearing home uniforms in the first round. Where 0-2, you're in some trouble, and 1-1, you're basically where you are now. Probably on the good side of the bubble, but still on the bubble.
Titel, let me go to you as we turn over to the Big Bear, actually, where we had another one of our major upsets this weekend with the Ohio State-Michigan State game. And how shocked were you by that result, especially the score differential there?
80-64, I'm still shocked. Kata Bates Diop with 32 points in 35 minutes. Buckeyes played near perfect, only committed 6 turnovers, made 7 of 15 threes, including Andrew Dockett banking in a 50-footer right before halftime to finish off the run. They were tied at 29, and then they just blew off the doors. Really impressive and shocking, and I think this is one of those games that gets a bubble team into the tourney. Not protected seed, not lock, but I don't know if there's a bigger win on anyone's resume this year right now than that one.
Well, David,
they were at home. I mean, like, yeah. But anyway.
You're not giving Ohio State credit for that then, David?
No, I'm giving them credit. I just don't think that it's not as much credit as if they would have won at Michigan State.
So it was better. Their win at Iowa on Thursday night was better than the home win over Michigan State on the road.
I thought he said the best win of the year by anyone.
I'm just trying to establish your definition of a good
win. In my opinion, it's not the best win of the year by anyone. No, like Texas Tech's win at Kansas, I would rank ahead of this one because it was a true road win.
Okay. Well, David, let me Rocco, let me go with you with this. This Northwestern team, we thought that they shot to go back to the tournament again this year heading into the season. What's wrong here? Getting blown out by Nebraska?
Yeah, well, that the Nebraska game, they didn't have McIntosh. And you know, if you watch enough Northwestern games, you know, he's the kind of heart and soul of the team. And so they were really flat that night. Nebraska, great win. Nothing against your boys, David.
Oh, just fantastic. I mean, yeah. They're back on their Final Four pace, I think.
I think they are.
Tim Miles just is – this was the best win of the year, this one.
I love it. And then the next game, the Penn State game, they got McIntosh back, but he was, you know, I don't think he was 100% yet. And they're just out of rhythm. I mean, they've dealt with injuries throughout the year. They could get hot later in the year, but they've dug probably too big of a hole. Hard to foresee them getting out of that and back into at-large talk.
Well, I guess one other team I want to really briefly discuss here, Matt, is this Minnesota team laying a clunker against Indiana for a team that really needs wins.
Well, yeah, we got to mention, yeah, Reggie Lynch really had no business playing this year and even last year, given what we know now that he had one situation that the police investigated and cleared him, but another one that's basically been going on this entire time that now the university is kicking him off campus for that, yeah. Not good for Richard Petito to be playing him. It doesn't look like the apple falls far from the tree there. Oh. You know, without Lynch, and I guess
in a mere couple, and I guess what? Wow. Yes. Anyway. Sorry.
And I'd say, too, like hurts for them is it looks like star sophomore Amir Coffey hurt his shoulder in that game, too. And with him out and Lynch out, I think you could basically put a fork in the Gophers.
Yeah, so what are we down to, a 4-5 bid Big Ten, depending on Maryland, Tytel? Is that what we've got left?
Yeah, I mean, Maryland looked pretty good the other night against Iowa, albeit at home, which obviously David is going to give no credit to. Yeah, I think that the top four are not locked. Purdue and Michigan State are locked. Ohio State and Michigan are looking great. Maryland's looking average. I'll set the over-under at 4.5, and I'll go just over. I think Maryland can squeeze in, but it's going to take a lot more work.
Well, here's the upcoming schedule. Some interesting games this week, Stalika, including Purdue, Michigan. We've got that Maryland, Ohio State game. A few others of note there coming up. Maryland, Michigan also.
I was about to mention Michigan, but they've got the group of death this week with the home game against Purdue, their in-state rival, Michigan State, on the road Saturday. Oh, and also a game 48 hours later at home against Maryland. But if the Wolverines come out of this unscathed, they're going to be shooting up the seed list.
Oh, yeah.
They
go 3-0. No, it's 3. Wow. I mean, if Rutgers were to go 3-0 against those teams, they'd also be shooting up the seed list.
Rutgers is at Michigan State Wednesday, hosting Ohio State Sunday. They got a shot there, right?
Well, yeah, if they win both of those games, they will still not be in the field. But they'll be closer to it.
Let's head over to the Pac-12, the last of our six major conferences. And I don't know if you want to talk about Colorado or not, Tytel.
Why not? They beat ASU, didn't they?
Yes. Something on Saturday also.
Wow. Colorado had a hell of a week, albeit at home. But
what an amazing week that they pick up this home sweep over Arizona and Arizona State. Can you figure this out, Tytel? What got into this Colorado team?
I mean, I think it was a combination of, like, ASU couldn't hit something from the backside of a barn. I think Shannon Evans on Thursday was 0-for-8. He's one of the best players in the Pac-12. He just did not show up. And then Saturday, a poor performance to Arizona. They only lost by 3 on the road. So David probably would credit this as a win because it was on the road. But
yes, so, it was a road win.
The thing is, I mean, Colorado's, they lost a ton of talent from last year. But if you look at their resume, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, anyone, I think as of today, this team is not in the field despite an amazing weekend.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, yes. I don't think this is a here. Go ahead, Rocco. A lot of bad losses still.
Yeah,
a lot of bad losses. They got something to build on, but, you know, I the committee's always going to value those road and neutral wins, so they're going to have to start doing something on the road. They started the Pac-12 schedule in the Oregons and got throttled in both of those games. So they are not playing well on the road at all yet this year. So a long way to go. They've got the LA trip coming up. They get to play the Arizonas again later this year. So we're not ready to put them in that field. But McKinley Wright's an incredible player. Nice job by Tad Boyle to recruit him. And he played great in both those wins. They do have a tremendous home court advantage up there in the Rockies. It's a brutal road trip. I can't find a tougher road trip anywhere in the country where you have to go to Salt Lake City and to Boulder, which is only a day apart. I think the Arizona-Utah game got over really late Thursday night, and then they had to play a noon tip-off local time on Saturday. So really about 36 hours between games. Not to make an excuse for Arizona, but that's tough, and they schedule like that a lot in this league.
I'll say real quick background here at McKinley Wright, and like he was originally going to Dana with Archie. I was a little surprised Archie didn't take him to Indiana, given that he doesn't have a point guard on that roster currently. But man, like Tad Boyle takes advantage of it, and now I bet you some teams are probably recruiting him behind the back already to get him to transfer somewhere.
Probably.
David, while probably not having much in terms of tournament implications, this was also a hell of a week for Stanford, which not only beat UCLA, but had one of the most craziest wins you've ever seen last night, late over USC.
Yes, it was about as much action as you could have in the final 10 seconds as possible, because I think we had 3 lead changes, did we not, or was it just 2? No,
yes,
it was 3.
And a half-court buzzer beater, yes.
And a half-court buzzer beater. So Stanford, while, yeah, again, not tournament implications, unless you look at it from the fact that it's yet USC slipping even further down the chain and needing to string together even more wins, still an exciting weekend for Stanford. And I don't know. I like this team. I don't think they're going anywhere, but I like to see them do well.
And that was just the most recent game, because you also have to go back to their double OT thriller against UCLA, where I think it was Stanford who hit the 3 to send the game into overtime.
Yeah.
UCLA ended up hitting a 3 themselves to send it to double overtime, and then Stanford outlasted the Bruins.
So if they're kind of like middle of the road, you know, beating the bottom of the league the rest of the way and losing to the top of it, they'll still get to have a good time at the banquet because of this weekend. So good for them.
But somehow they lost to Cal at home last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the upcoming schedule in the Pac-12. The games of note, the Oregon schools are at the Arizona schools. Also kind of circle that Thursday night Utah-UCLA game.
Yeah.
If this game was later in the season, it would have a lot of bubble implications type of game. It's what it would feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Utah with the 0-2 week against the Arizona schools this week. But let's run through a few other conferences real quick. And while I personally happen to love the style of play they play in the American, with those wonderful tempo numbers.
Oh, yes, it is just an outstanding – like, I mean, there's fast, and then there's all-star game numbers, and then there's the American.
Mike Dunleavy sort of tried to fight the good fight there, Tulane.
Yep. Oh, I've actually enjoyed watching Tulane this year. And I'm not saying that to be facetious. They've been not tournament good, but way, way, way better than I ever remember them being.
I can't remember them having 11 wins at this point of the year outside the brief Perry Clark run.
Yeah.
But I think it was probably a Hoops Junkies nightmare on Sunday at noontime when Temple and Central Florida were playing each other, knowing that your alternative was a blowout between Good Davidson and George Mason.
I slept in.
Tytel, this Wichita State team, another nice 2-0 week. Not that they played anybody that's great, great. Houston has a pulse at least, but what do you do with this team? They're up fifth in the rankings. Is this a team that could that's a one or two seed type caliber or not?
I forget who on the panel last week put Wichita State in their Final Four. I'm going to have to think about that. Wichita State has 17 games left. I assume they're going to be favored in 16 of them, except for, as Delika knows, the one game at Cincinnati, which is on February 18th. I really think this team can win 25 games, and because of that, I think this team, I don't know about one seed. The metrics all look solid. I'm thinking more like a – what do I have in my current bracket? I think I have them as a three – no, I have them as a four, but I think they're going to keep going. I think they're going to end up as a three seed, and I really think this team is going to go far. They just got Marcus McDuffie back, their leading scorer from last year, who got off to a very slow start in his first two, but then he had double digits in game three, and he's only going to get better and fit in together. I really think this is a very special team, Wichita.
I do too, but Chad brings up an interesting point because we've seen teams in recent years with bloated records. I remember Louisville, their one and only year in the American, finished the season ranked third or fourth or whatever it was, ended up on the four line, and I think we later learned that they were the last four seed. So it seems like the committee –
did they win the national championship also?
The previous year they did, yeah.
Oh, that was the year after the championship. Okay.
Yeah, that was the year after.
They went out to the second round to Kentucky.
Okay. Or wherever it was. I think it was the Sweet 16. But, but my point is we've seen the committee when we've seen – last year was Cincinnati. I forget where they were in the rankings, but they won a ridiculous amount of games, sixth line. SMU, 30-plus wins, sixth line. It seems like the committee wants to see meat on the profile, and is it going to be there for Wichita, who I thought was – grossly underseeded in terms of how good they actually were last year on the 10 line. That was ridiculous, in my opinion. But thoughts?
Rocco, one other thing. Well, first of all, any comments on what David said? And then second, I want to ask you also about SMU.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, David, I agree with you. I think this conference gives them a few more opportunities to prove that they are as good as the metrics say they are. Last year was incredibly frustrating, because we thought they would get the beat up Illinois State a couple times, but then Illinois State faded, and nobody really knew where to place them on the committee, and they got the shaft big time by getting a 10. But now we fast forward to this year, they're in the American, and they need teams like UCF and Houston to legitimize themselves. I'm encouraged by UCF's fourth ranked defense in the nation. Obviously, Taco Fall a big part of that. And then, Chad, going to your question on SMU, they look like a tournament team coming into this week, but they had a really, really tough time on the road, obviously getting upset at Tulane and then going to Cincinnati and getting slapped in the face. So, SMU should – they still, on eye test-wise, look like a tournament team, but there's not a ton of chances in this league. You got to look to knock off one of those two top teams. So, really interested to see how many bids we get out of here.
Well, next week, it's not coming up this week. I think it's early next week that they got their trip to Wichita State. They have a must-win this week against Temple on Wednesday night. Matt, anything else you're really circling in this week's schedule in the American?
I guess Wichita go to Tulsa. I mean, they should win, but I guess in the conference American game, we'll see. But not a whole lot this week. Yeah, no, sorry for our colleague Lee, that fake Cincy South Florida rivalry now.
David, the Atlantic 10, let's start with Rhode Island. Tied with Duquesne, who's having a great season by Duquesne standards, but not by any type of national standards. Yep. But Rhode Island picks up a couple more wins this week. Still starting to cruise through A-10 play here.
I think so, and I think they're going to run away from the conference. And I like the Bonnies, but it's kind of hard to get behind them. 1-2 in conference play, and a little bit inexplicably struggling out of the gate. Now, I do think that in the end they'll be there. I think this was just kind of an anomaly, and they'll still get to the – I don't see them losing more than once or twice the rest of the way, maybe to Rhode Island once or twice, but – are we looking at just one team inside the bubble here, the Bonnies still get there?
Well, Tytel, I've got to go to you on this. During last week's podcast, I said, I said the Bonnies have a tough week coming up, don't they, at Dean and at St. Joe's. I think you laughed at me. You were right. They were, but you were right. It wasn't a tough week. Neither game was that close.
Well, they were both by 10 or less, so I disagree with that. But you should laugh at me for getting on the Bonnies bandwagon because they have, I think, blown three tires on the four-wheel drive and are just heading for disaster. They have no shot in an at-large, I don't think.
Really? Already you think they're out, even if they string together, even if they lose one the rest of the way?
They got Rhode Island.
If they beat Rhode Island, if they sweep Rhode Island, that certainly gets them trending in the right direction. I don't think they can because Rhode Island has EC Matthews back. Not a coincidence that they're like 7-0 in the past seven games with him after going 3-3 when he was injured. Jalen Adams back certainly helps his team, but not good enough. Yeah, I mean, you can't lose to Dayton and St. Joe's back-to-back, even on the road, and have a good chance.
Well, and
of course, David, it also doesn't help that they have VCU on the road only.
But David, I think that does help them because they need that type of win streak. Because look at these RPIs of the rest of their schedule. Besides the two Rhode Island games, they're playing garbage. It's a, you know, we would rip a team apart for scheduling that non-conference, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we would.
And that's why I kind of agree with Tytel. They really, I think, one more loss to the conference tournament if it's the maximum. And I don't know that the way they played this week that they can do that. Upcoming schedule, right. Real quick at the A-10. Yeah. Rocco, I'm sorry, you had a comment?
Yeah, I think a lot of people right now are still having them close to the bubble because they have four top 100 wins, two of them on the road. But the chances that Buffalo and Vermont stay in that top 75 range are pretty slim. So they really have to become the big-time Syracuse and Maryland fans the rest of the way. And Syracuse had a horrible week last week. And then they also have to win at least one of those Rhode Island games and not lose any more of these trip-ups in the A-10 where they're losing the team's 100 to 200 range.
Right. And Sleeka, you had a comment also, and I highlighted there that this Saturday is the Bonnie Rhode Island round one.
I was just going to go back to Davidson for a moment because it was kind of interesting prior to their game yesterday at George Mason. From what I understand, their bus actually broke down and they had to call Uber for, I think, four or five cars just to get the whole team.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned this. This is arena. A great story.
Yeah.
They called Uber drivers to take them to the arena.
And given how badly they wanted George Mason, just how much of a demand is there going to be for Uber in the Charlotte area now?
Oh, bro, that's a great story.
Let's go. Where we go next? Mountain West Conference. And Matt, we were talking about the Mountain West as being a possible two-bid league. Might still happen, but Boise State, a rough trip to Wyoming this weekend.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think that's all that bad of a loss I watched. I thought Wyoming was decent because I did watch the Nevada-Wyoming game last week. And I thought Wyoming not a half-bad team, but they can't afford too many more of those slip-ups. They probably need 14-4, 15-3 probably in Mountain West to realistically be in the at-large hunt because their win at Oregon is not holding up real well, so... They definitely need to get Nevada once and probably get San Diego State and then not too many more slip-ups or else it will be Nevada or bust for the at-large.
Speaking of bust, UNLV going down at home to Utah State. Ouch!
Yeah. it's definitely not in the at-large picture anymore. I mean, if you want to make it such an argument for San Diego State, but even that's kind of difficult. I think probably have to win out most of the way as well. Let's quickly turn over to the final conference for the night. Over in the West Coast Conference, where Tytel, we still got Gonzaga and St. Mary's both undefeated. Can St. Mary's get a bid? Let's say put it that way. If they just beat everybody other than Gonzaga.
No, but if they beat Gonzaga, I think so. They're 15-2. Their two losses, both neutral site, by a combined 7 points to Washington State, who's not making the tourney, and Georgia, who's probably not making the tourney, but in overtime to an SEC team. If this team keeps winning and loses to Gonzaga twice, they'll be, I believe, 27-4. Not a great strength of schedule. So I think it'll be like a couple of years ago when they went like 29-4 and missed out. If they can beat Gonzaga, one out of the two, that makes it very interesting.
Rocco, you were at the St. Mary's game the other night. What is your thoughts about watching them on the court? I mean, did it look like a tournament team?
Yeah, I mean, well, Emmett Nahr and of course, Jock Lawndale, those guys are players. And Colin Neal gives them a real big spark off the bench. You know, he's been at three other schools. But he's a fiery guy. I don't think they're going to lose at home except for the Gonzaga game. They just can't seem to get over the hump. The season's really going to come down to that. Potentially. But the other thing I think about the WCC that people nationally might be overlooking is the top four or five now are pretty darn good. Like San Diego's the best defense in the country, and I'm kind of ruining my final thought right now. But I think San Diego's going to knock one of these two teams off out of the four tries they'll get. And then BYU took St. Mary's to overtime last week. Then you've got Pacific who just beat BYU. And Loyola Marymount gave Gonzaga a little scare. So, I mean, I think assuming that St. Mary's will just come down to those two Gonzaga games is kind of selling the rest of the league short. We're finally in a season where there's more to talk about than just these two teams, although they are clearly the two best at this point. And St. Mary's would make a great tournament team. I think the way that they select teams on the committee, it's going to be hard for them to make it look pretty without a Gonzaga win.
Yeah, I think they can only afford one non-Gonzaga loss, and then they have to be Gonzaga. So I think 16-2 with a Gonzaga win, the St. Mary's probably gets in. But anything worse, then it's the NIT again for him.
Okay, well, there is the West Coast Conference coming up. The schedule: St. Mary's is at Santa Clara and Pepperdine this week. Gonzaga hosting Portland and at San Fran. But on that note, I think I'm going to go ahead and pull the screen share down here. And run through each of you for any other final thoughts for the evening. And Matt, you were just speaking, so I'm going to stick with you. Any other comments?
First, a quick shout out to Marcus Howard for that 52-point game at Providence, where he just went NBA Jam in the second half in overtime. But here's one on the Big 12, for as good as it is, and I think it is. Over the last 12 years, the number one KenPom team only put a combined four teams in the Final Four, never a national title. I think the Big 12 faces a similar fit. I think they have a lot of teams that can make the second weekend, but I think are just going to fall a little short of the Final Four. And I think both Oklahoma and West Virginia, two of their flagship teams, might be prone to an upset early on. Say West Virginia, if they face a good guard team like they got Stephen F. Austin a few years ago early. And Oklahoma, if Trae Young does a 7-for-24, I think both are vulnerable, possibly even to an early upset. And for as good and entertaining as the Big 12 is, I'm not sure it's March is going to be quite as good as people expect.
Oh, okay. That's a pretty bold prediction, actually. Salika.
We talk quite frequently about the Cameron crazies at Duke, and we also talk about the curtain of distraction at Arizona State. We also have a budding news story this year. Sorry, Tytel. And that's going to be at Rutgers, where they have some rather odd pregame videos meant to distract the team. And we're going to go ahead and pull up the screen share here and give you a little example of just what teams have been dealing with. I believe that was an example of what they were playing before the Seton Hall game back in December.
So they just played. I didn't know anything about this.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, they gave that to Wisconsin as well. And that is what you get to watch during your pregame shoot-around. And it is just distracting, trust me. But Tytel, let me head over to you with any final thoughts.
Okay, I got to follow that guy. Best I can do is I know we like to talk basketball because that's what we're here for, but we've talked a little football tonight on the biggest night of the year in college football. So John Wooden is the cream of the crop with 10 titles in 12 years with the Bruins. The next closest is so far behind. Coach K, who we think is a god, only 5 titles in 25 years. I say only because compared to 10 of 12, it's nothing. Nick Saban, as we speak, going for his 6th title in 15 years, which would tie Bear Bryant, also of Alabama, for the most ever. Bear won 6 titles in 19 years. Nobody's ever going to catch John Wooden. He's on another plane. I never thought somebody would catch and possibly pass Bear Bryant. Nick Saban is going to get it done, I think, and will go down as the greatest college football coach ever.
So apparently there's some other game going on tonight. I thought we were the only thing in town.
Right,
yeah. But, no, Cal Baptist is playing at Dixie State tonight.
Oh, they are. Don't
forget
yes.
the team of the people. Oh.
Team of the people playing against all of the South tonight, all of Dixie. It is a monumental game tonight.
Go Lancers. Yeah. So going back to where we were at, discussing the WCC, you know, the matchup I was able to go to and cover the other night between San Diego and St. Mary's was really, really an interesting clash of styles. San Diego came in the number one team in the country in defending the three-point shot at only 24%. St. Mary's came in with the seventh best offense, the 13th best three-point shooting offense, and yet with 10 minutes left in the entire game, they still had not made a three. They ended up going 1-for-9 for the entire game. Incredible way that San Diego's defending the three-point shot and defending in general. They've got a great player, Isaiah Wright. Keep an eye on the Toreros. And pay attention to team defense. I know we all want to see good offense, but some of these teams with team defense can really shut down a good offense.
All right. David, let me have you finish us off for the evening.
I probably shouldn't go here because it's more of a question than it is a thought or a statement. But in regards to Ted Valentine, not him specifically, but just officiating in general, I don't know if most people really fully understand this, but essentially referees are independent contractors. They're hired by conference league offices for conference games, and they're typically hired generally by the home team for out-of-conference games. And what you end up with is just people that don't really report to anybody but themselves. They make various degrees of money. To be honest, I don't think the vast majority of them make enough for what they do. I don't think they get the respect that they deserve for what they do. And should the NCAA, not just for basketball, but across the board, have centralized officiating where these guys are full-time employees instead of part-time independent contractors who are basically working on their own dime and in a lot of cases not getting paid enough to do it? Would we get better officiating and could we hold them more accountable if we just completely change the model of how officiating works? Anyway, I go back and forth with that.
I think that's a great point. That may be a good topic for an entire show at some point, perhaps in the off season, just because it is interesting because you're talking about the NCAA then having to actually be the one paying them. Where does that money come from? Especially if you're talking about them getting together and getting a lot more money than what they're making right now. What a school like right. a SWAC might say, hey, we'll give you, you know, $20 to come officiate our game or whatever's going on.
That's about what some of them get. I mean, yeah.
I think it's up to the conferences, and they need to do so. Like, I think if you want the quality of refereeing to improve in that, all the conferences we talk about here on the Hoops HD report, form a consortium, get these guys hired, pay them real what they make or even a little bit more, but do it so they don't have to do six nights a week in five different states and they're run ragged and you get inconsistent refereeing, which is honestly human nature given that
right.
the way these guys are traveling and, like I said, doing like six games in five states a week.
Yeah, I don't think for one second Ted Valentine was in the right for what he did. But another part of me is like, this guy has, I mean, the way that they're treated by the coaches, by the players, by the fans, and how little they're paid, mostly. I know, like, Ted Valentine makes more than most because he has the reputation. Yeah, eventually you're just going to get mad and say, screw it, I'm turning my back. Even though he shouldn't have done that at all, I'm not saying that at all, but should there be, like what Matt said, some sort of centralized officiating?
Well, I think it's a real good topic and maybe one we could explore even more in the future. But I guess on that note, it is time for us to get going here because there is a football game on that some of us want to watch, I think. But on behalf of John Tytel, Matt Sikowski, David Griggs, John Stalica, Rocco Miller, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real